Log, Earth Day 1994, Saturday, June 4th, 1994. Today, I got up in the morning and went and watched cartoons. Then I went to Chattanooga and went to sleep on the way back down to Valley Head. Oh, I stayed in Valley Head and played all day, the rest of the day. Played baseball, karate, played softball, excuse me, with Greg and all my cousins, and did karate and ran around, we had threw my mom and papa's surprise birthday party. Anniversary party. 45th anniversary. We were all going to play Ghost in the Graveyard, but everybody left but me and Jennifer. And I laid on the swing and went in and talked to Papa. Papa's winking at everybody now. We came home, I showed Jennifer my kittens. Then I drank some Kool-Aid, went, brushed my teeth, washed my face, came in here, and we leave off now, and he's reading. Hello, testing, testing.
What shall we do now, David?
Whatever our hearts desire.
Run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan Hare Stadium time is 8:55 p.m. Central Standard Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and True podcast, harbored by the friendly folks over at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It's I, Son of Crow, Drew Croson, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter. You can find me at Son of Crow on Venmo. And that's where you go if you want to take Josh Dubs' bet on Tank Williams and Bo Nix finishing at the exact same amount of Heisman votes for next year. He's offering that as 1,000 to 1. So you can send me that money on Venmo and bet Josh Dubb 1,000 to 1 odds that he thinks they're not going to get the same votes, by the way. So he's giving you 1,000 to 1 odds on that. Joining me on tonight's episode of the program, to one side of me, the rumor monger at Ryan S. Starrett. The S is for slept in last episode, but alive and well today.
I'm back.
Ryan, we were genuinely concerned for your well-being, which I think shows that both of us are fathers, and also that both of us are old and can't fathom. The idea of just falling asleep in the afternoon on the couch is so foreign to me because I could not imagine that life right now. Do I want it? Absolutely. If I close my eyes right now, would I fall asleep? 100%. But it's not
enough.
You ever
get one of those colds where like you convince yourself for like a whole day that you're going to be fine. It's just you probably ate something weird. I don't know. Something, allergies maybe. And then you get to the end of the workday and you sit down and just you're done. And I fell asleep at 6 o'clock on the couch. I woke up at 6 a.m. the next morning on the couch.
Jeez. Yeah.
No better.
You might have had coronavirus.
Round two.
To the other side of me, giving you the full Fort Payne ASMR that hopefully you heard to open this show, the AU Chief.
Hey, y'all.
So explain to us what that recording is, if as long as Jack played it. If he didn't play it, then this explanation is going to be even better.
My mom has apparently been going through all her tapes that she has, and like cassette tapes, and playing them for Alex, my son. And that one she found apparently had me on it. I know there are others out there. There's like a whole radio show that I've recorded of myself at some point between the ages of 8 and 12. Possibly some with me and some of my cousins on it. But yeah, I was journaling, I guess, is what I was doing there. There should be more. At the very end of it, you may have heard some, it was David versus Goliath from, local, well, not local, but the, Christian radio that my mom used to record stuff for me off of. Apparently I recorded right over that.
So. Did you ever get any Adventures in Odyssey?
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
Oh yeah.
I was a big Adventures in Odyssey listener. I was a stop down entertainment in my house.
It's possible that was one of those, but I'm not.
Dr. Whitaker, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Ryan has no clue what we're talking about from the Baptist.
No, I'm assuming this is like VeggieTales, but before there was TV.
That's a good take.
It's just whatever, watching TV was just listening to the radio.
Imagine if back in the day, VeggieTales and like Prairie Home Companion had a baby.
I don't know what that second one is either. So
what? Do you not get NPR in Auburn anymore? Come on, guys. Also joining us, the best recruiting analyst going today. And you can tell anybody else I said that. You can tell the folks over at 24/7. You can tell the folks over at Rivals. If they want to be the man, they got to beat the man. It is the AU nerd. And he is the man.
Please don't do that.
Adam, and say, how come nerd gives me better content than you for free? Hashtag college in the hack.
That's a completely different podcast.
Oh, it's so good. So, nerd, Auburn has been very active in the transfer window, to use the soccer term, and picked up, was it 7 guys now?
Yeah, up to 7.
So tell us a little bit about, we have you on today, nerd, to talk a little bit about transfers, because I don't really know much about them. Because I quit watching, I don't watch a lot of recruiting tape anyway, so I definitely don't know about guys that didn't sign with Auburn when out of high school. So if I'm watching any recruiting tape, it's just the guys who are going to sign with Auburn. You have probably watched some of these kids' recruiting tape before they signed with whatever school they went to before Auburn.
Maybe a few of them. Not all of them. I haven't reached that level yet. You know, one day kids out of the house, they get really lonely. Then I can really just kind of focus in.
I'd like to give a little peek behind the curtain here. Crow probably doesn't know this because I don't think he lurks in the Croots channel of our Slack. But the nerd tipped us off to every single one of these transfers. I want to say at least a week in advance on all of them.
The best part is when I do lurk in that channel. I don't really type a lot.
Okay,
but I'll go over there and peep and see what nerd's game's doing. But I will say, my favorite are when nerd tips us off on which Auburn position coaches are now following members of other programs, therefore letting us know potentially so-and-so's about to hit the portal. He's coming to Auburn. And he's been right more often than not.
Yeah, it's I'm learning that that's actually what a lot of these recruiting folks do too. some folks, which I totally get it because that's like how, crazy enough, it's actually how a lot of these coaches will like communicate with kids is they'll you know slide into the DMs.
How often do you catch coaches following not football players?
actually, yeah. Yeah, especially analysts.
Oh yeah.
Like the people that aren't the big ones that don't think they're under the microscope, you can hop onto there and you're like, oh, okay. You were in a different type of mood today when you came on to find some people.
No, that was probably their 1 a.m. Twitter time.
Yeah.
People really don't understand that that is public record.
No.
Like, if your account is not private, everybody can see your likes. Everybody can see your follows. It's an amazing thing that people are still thinking that they're somehow private on there.
I actually think you have to actually be extra careful about it now, especially with the transfer stuff, because I think you're going to see people talk about tampering and be like, oh, this coach was following this kid, you know, like half the coaching staff started following a kid before he was in the portal. They're totally recruiting him off a roster. So it's going to be, I can't wait for the first NCAA case that comes down to Twitter DMs and the timing of when it happens.
No one would ever be that silly to follow someone before they're officially in the portal. Not for Auburn, at least. Not multiple times.
Well, actually,
this recruiting class.
I will say Auburn has not. I have not caught Auburn in that yet. Now, they're quick with it when some of them hit the portal. And you know that they were ready for it.
It's almost like they knew they were going to be in the portal.
Yeah, they get that. They just got that itch that, you know, someone's about to appear out of the portal.
There's a disturbance.
So they
go
over check. Yeah. But yeah. So it's definitely been crazy. This is by far going to be the weirdest. I mean, last off season was weird with COVID and everything shut down, and you have a bunch of kids this year that signed without ever visiting a campus, which means next year's transfer portal is going to be even crazier. But it's been nuts, and Auburn has been super active. I was curious to see what Harsin would do with this. Would he, you know, because when he first got hired, he sounded kind of cautious about it. Like, as in his press conference, he kind of just gave like a non-answer about it. But he's been extremely aggressive, and I don't think they're actually even close to being done yet either.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, there's been a lot of confusion about, like, when you sign these transfers, do they count against your 25-man limit? How do they count against the 85 limit? This is kind of like a new thing for recruiting, especially transfers on this, you know, on this scale. So how does that work?
Yeah, so first off, I don't think anyone, including people that actually work at the NCAA and an athletic
especially department, the people at the NCAA,
actually understand how any of this truly works. Because every time I feel like I've got a handle on it, something changes. But my understanding for this, right now, the rules really are kind of a mess in regards to this, because every transfer you take – so the way it works is each year a school has 25 scholarships that they can give to players. That's the initial counter is what it's called. But every team is required to only – they're only allowed to have – up to 85 scholarship players on the roster. So those are the kind of the two numbers coaches are always balancing, the 25 for each signing class, and then not over signing in terms of having 90 or 92 kids on the roster. That's where the whole processing idea came from.
And that's been hard enough this past year with kids getting, you know, a sixth year or fifth year of eligibility.
Yes.
With COVID.
Yes. Well, I believe with the COVID rules is the 6 years are actually not going to count towards
okay.
The 85, or they've either added a buffer. I'm not again, it's all dark magic that no one truly understands, but I'm going forward with the assumption based off what I've understand is that those seniors won't count towards the 85 as part of the free. I think it's going to get really interesting in like 2 to 3 years when these kids who had a free year as a freshman, like how do they even keep track of all that, of who's a 16 year? But yeah, so you have the 25 and 85, and then, but the tricky part right now is a transfer counts as initial counter. So they count against that 25. Every single one of these kids have counted towards that 25 limit, but there's a way around that rule. And typically the way people do it is through blue shirting, which is basically you don't recruit a kid in the NCAA's eyes. In the NCAA's eyes, a kid is recruited if they took an official visit, if the coaches – visited that player in person, like went to their house, sent them a letter of intent, or set up some sort of financial aid package. Well, in today's world of virtual visits, there are no official visits. Coaches aren't meeting these kids on campus. They don't have to send them a letter of intent because they're a transfer. So this is kind of how a lot of these schools are working around it. The drawback of that is every kid you oversign from this year's 25 initial counter counts against next year's. So it's all tricky, but right now the way to look at it is Auburn staff is currently taking a kind of a calculated risk and saying, we're going to go and try to max out the talent we can get this year via the portal to get to the 85 limit on our roster and try to have a really good season, knowing that it could mean we take a much smaller class in 2022 if the rules don't change. But the hope is if you, you know, nail these transfers and you have a good performance, then maybe it'll help you with the 2023 class, which is kind of the recruiting class where the staff will finally get be on even ground with the rest of the team. So yeah, that's kind of the spiel of how I see things right now.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is it seems like a lot of these guys, it's not like they're all grad transfers. I mean, yes, some of these are, you know, whatever, freshmen last year, sophomores last year, still have 3 or 4 years of eligibility. So it's not like you're mortgaging the future just to bring these guys in.
Yeah, so far of the seven transfers, only two have a single year of eligibility remaining. So only two are grad
transfers.
That's
crazy to me. That's the new, the most, like, the biggest difference in normal years. This is kind of the new normal, is that, and this is, we're seeing this in basketball too, where kids will transfer and they have a full 4 years of eligibility left. You're like, this really is like, you're basically getting to see them play in college for a year and then re-recruit them.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, I mean, I'll admit my soccer lingo is pretty low, but it's like, you know, Auburn just loaning kids out to these G5
no, it's absolutely
and,
right.
FCS schools, and then, you know, if they get it. But that's totally happening. And there's actually a lot of that. There's a lot of frustration at the lower levels knowing that these big programs are going to, every time you have a kid that breaks out, those kids know that some big school somewhere in a Power 5 conference will take them. And so then they're hopping into the portal and teams are taking them, like Auburn.
They're using, Auburn's using using like Alabama State or South Alabama as like an Eredivisie team. Just letting them, oh, you could go play over there, win the Dutch League, and then we'll sign you back up. It's no big deal.
Well, if these smaller schools are smart, they can turn that around and say, hey, you went to Alabama and they didn't play you your freshman year like you were supposed to. Come play for us and you'll be a star right away.
Somebody in Orlando had that same idea.
Yeah, Joe,
I think that same idea down there.
He might be setting a world record for most incoming transfers in the year.
So got to get those 4 stars, man. Even if they haven't done anything, you got to get those 4 stars.
Well, let's talk about some of these guys that are coming in. Some of them, like Ike Liotta and Trayshawn Miller, we've known for a long time. Yeah. They've been committed for a while.
Is that Ray Liotta's cousin?
I assume so.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look at a picture of him, it's just striking. It's a striking resemblance.
I think it's the eyes.
Do you look coked out? Or should we be signing somebody?
Dude, Ray Liotta is fantastic in Goodfellas. I know that's a basic thing to say, but it is 100% true.
Okay, sorry. Sorry. Back to the serious talk.
So it seems like the last 2 weeks or so has been the big, bringing guys in after we lost a bunch of names about a month back after spring practice. So let's start at the defensive backfield with Donovan Kaufman and Darius Knighton, both safeties coming in. Where do those guys fit into, you know, the roster for this upcoming year? Just tell us more about them.
Yeah, definitely. So, by Darius Knighton, he's one of the two grad transfers. He's coming out of Southeast Missouri State, so CMU, where he was an all-conference player 2 years. He started playing ever since he was a redshirt freshman. This kid has played a ton. He's got like 200-plus career tackles. He really inflated. I put a tweet out the other day about Auburn's replacing the production with what's gone out and in. He's really inflated those numbers. He's able to make it look really nice based off his stuff. But yeah, he's both him and Kaufman, I think, are a prototype of what you're going to see Derek Mason recruit at the safety. So Bydarius Knighton can play nickel. He could play boundary safety. He could play field safety. Based off his comments with what he said in his discussions with Derek Mason, it sounds like he's going to be playing a lot of field safety and a lot of nickel, kind of splitting time between there. 6'1", 200, I think he's around 200 pounds. Really good tackler, great tackler. You know, I think the big question is going to be with him is, does he have the speed to play against SEC receivers? If, you know, if he's matched up in the nickel on a slot receiver, does he have the speed to play there? But that was a recruitment that happened really quickly. He'd been in the portal for a while and actually was kind of Mississippi State's top target. And they had kind of felt good about where they stood on him, but he kind of been holding out because Auburn had been talking with them. And then I think when the news of Chris Thompson was going to hit the portal, because that was one of those moves I don't think the staff necessarily expected to happen. They very quickly pivoted and offered Knighton, and he basically committed within days. But yeah, so he's one that could really play in all three of those positions, either nickel, field safety, or boundary safety. Donovan Kaufman's the same way. He was Derek Mason's prized recruit in Vanderbilt signing class last year. Beat out teams like Florida State, Ole Miss, took him out of Louisiana. Started the first two games, was incredibly productive, had like 15 tackles, had a really good kick return against LSU. You could see the potential. Came down with COVID, got diagnosed with the myocarditis, and so he was basically sidelined for the year. He's apparently completely fine now. No kind of lingering health concerns or anything like that. And after Mason got fired, he went through spring, but it seems pretty clear that he didn't want to stick around. He jumped in the portal. That was a big recruitment. You know, Auburn definitely had the inroad there with Derek Mason, but Steve Sarkisian over at Texas came hard after Kaufman. And there was actually a period of time where I think there was some confidence that maybe he would go to Texas. There's actually a few former staff members that used to work off the field at Vanderbilt that are on Sarkisian staff that kind of helped them get in there. But Mason was able to close the deal. Kaufman's the same type as Knighton. He's a guy that Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer had a great film room on him and actually charted his snaps. And it's pretty evenly split between nickel and safety. And what's interesting is then if you look at what Auburn has on the roster, Ladarius Tennyson is of the same mold. He's a guy that has played nickel snaps, but he's also a guy that worked in safety all spring. So you're going to see all three of those a lot. I think you're going to see them interchange. I think it's actually going to be really hard to like put together a depth chart projection for what they're going to do there because you've got so many different pieces that can do a lot of stuff. But it's clear that Mason prizes versatility really across the defense, but especially in the backfield. So both those guys, and Kaufman has 4 years left to play. So he was a true freshman. So he's essentially, I would consider him like a four-star signee as part of Auburn's 2021 class because you've got proven production. If you've seen him compete against – he looked really good against LSU. You've seen him that he can play at this level.
A&M played Vanderbilt their first game. Isn't that right? And yes. Vanderbilt kind of put the clamps on that offense.
Yeah, it was a grind. That game's actually super boring to watch, but it's like it's actually a good example of a lot of the stuff Mason can do. And they definitely A&M struggled to kind of consistently move the ball and finish drives. That was a really good game, and you know, LSU was they had just some kind of fell apart in a few places, but Kaufman had quite a few, you know, pretty he doesn't have any kind of major incredible oh my gosh moments on his tape, but a lot of that's because they didn't try him or he had this guy covered, so he wasn't really part of the play. But yeah,
so it seems like both of those guys are going to be, again, you don't know what a depth chart's going to look like, but they're both going to be playing significant snaps this fall.
Yeah,
along with Smoke Monday, it was definitely going to be a starter.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Smoke, Tennyson, Knighton, and Kaufman all four rotating around at the safety spots. And my personal opinion is I think you're going to see Knighton stay more at the safety, and you're going to see Kaufman seize more time at the nickel with Tennyson and Pritchett. So I think you're going to see that kind of group there rotating around, and there's good depth. And Kaufman will probably also be a factor in the return game. He was the kick returner for Vanderbilt, and you know I don't know if Auburn wants Tank running back kicks every game, so no. You could see Kaufman make an impact there.
I watched A-Day. He ran almost all of them back, didn't he?
I mean, we scored a touchdown every time, so if it works, keep doing it. But
do we know if Harsin has been averse to throwing his starting running back back there?
I guess
He's never had one as prized as Tank, though. So
that's an interesting
question.
Because you've got the different school. Like Tuberville used to play, and Chizik to an extent, too. We'd have a lot of starters playing on special teams underneath both those dudes. And Gus was a little more camera shy about it.
Well, I think times have changed just a little bit, too. I think a lot of people are adverse to putting a dude back there, and there's more specialists now. I mean, guys can be a specialist in the NFL doing that. So,
yeah. Carnell used to return punts.
Yeah.
Which would be crazy now. But I actually don't know. He Jay Ajayi didn't do any of that at Boise, but I don't know. I don't know enough about Boise to know if that's something he did or not.
He also may have never had anyone talented enough to put back there doing that stuff. So.
Especially the last couple of years where, you know, especially kickoff returns have been kind of neutered, you know, you don't really see the same volume of kicks brought back out of the end zone.
I think you got to give Tank a few reps back there, but I think having the flexibility to someone like Kaufman gives you another person that you can use back there so that Tank doesn't do it every single time.
And Tank can be kind of like the Cowboys used Dez Bryant, where it was like he didn't return every punt. But if there was a punt that it's like, all right, we really could use a good return on this punt, they throw him out there, which I always was like, as a kid, and even like, I wasn't that young when Des was playing, I'd always think,
we were out of college by then.
Don't you always want a good return? Like, how isn't every punt an opportunity for a touchdown? Why?
Exactly.
I think maybe that's just an analytics creeping into my brain, but it's like, every punt's the same. The first quarter and the fourth quarter are the exact same. If you can get a touchdown in the first quarter, it's still worth 7 in the fourth. Like, why not just score?
You're not accounting the clutch return factor in your calculations.
It's because clutch is not real. It's not a real stat.
That's Rich coming from Auburn fans.
I know.
We kind of live and die on clutch.
There is a mean that we're going to regress to at some point, but I just don't know where it is.
I think that regression has been the last couple of years.
I think it's called 8-5.
Yeah, 8-5.
That's regression.
Sure.
I think all sports this year really bring us back down to the mean of luck.
Except for women's golf.
Yeah.
Well, they're competing for the national championship.
Not anymore.
Well, they were.
Hey, we boned out, Josh. Sorry, Josh.
Sorry, Dub.
All right, so let's go on to the defensive line. Again, we had one guy, Aki Leota, come in a couple months back, but recently two defensive tackles, both in-state kids, if I understand correctly, Tony Fair at UAB and Marcus Harris from Kansas. How are they going to work in this rotation? I mean, Auburn's got couple of starters they seem comfortable with, but you know, you're always rotating a ton on the defensive line. Plus with this, is Auburn running 4-3 or 3-4? Not really sure how that is going to look.
Yeah. So, Fair played at UAB, but he's actually from, Indiana. He's been everywhere. And Ferguson actually tweeted out the other day where, wow, I'm turning this into a Ferg promo. You're welcome.
Every week.
You're welcome, Auburn Observer. Where he signed in the 2015 class. He was in the same class as Kerryon.
He's older than Ryan.
Yeah, I think he's – yeah, he might actually be.
Not quite your age. But.
But, yeah, so he's the big nose tackle out of UAB. You know, under Mason, you can't glean a ton from spring games. I don't think you should, you know – even though we all will do it anyway, like Elijah Cannon, it's obviously going to be a superstar. What you could gather out of that is like, what is the base personnel? What is the base looks that we're going to do on both sides of the ball? And it's very clear under Mason, Auburn's going to be a base 3-4 when they're facing, you know, 12 personnel, heavier personnel. And when they go to nickel, they're going to be actually a 2-4. They're going to take the nose tackle off and they're going to slide the two ends inside and play, kind of defensive tackles there. So where Fair fits in is he is a true nose tackle. So when Auburn's in that 3-4 set, He's a guy that you plant in the middle of those 2A gaps, and you say, okay, try and move him. Because he is a giant, he's a giant human being.
A Josh Thompson type, Stump, yes. As he was called.
Yes, yes. That type of effectiveness where his goal is to just blow up all inside zone plays to where there's just your interior line is not getting to the linebackers.
Did I see that when he was in JUCO, he had a 25-tackle game?
His JUCO numbers are insane. Now, I don't know enough about, I think it's like Pima or Pimo Community College to know what his competition was, but his production in JUCO was absolutely ridiculous for a nose tackle.
I don't think I could get 25 tackles playing against middle schoolers.
I'm pretty sure he had like 100-plus tackles. I'm guessing it must be playing like a double option team, and they just gave him the re-dive every play, and he just sat there. But the good thing about Fair is you've actually seen him against Power 5 opponents. So in 2019, when UAB – did UAB win that game? Did they beat Tennessee in 2019? I can't remember who Tennessee's all lost to. But he absolutely feasted against Tennessee's offensive line.
Tennessee won that game.
Okay. He
lost feasted, to Georgia State.
That's what it was. He feasted in that game. He had like 6 tackles, I think 3 or 4 for loss. They had no answer for him. And he faced Miami last year. And while Miami ran all over him, if you watch a lot of the tape, he holds up well. And again, he had like 4 or 5 tackles in that game, which for nose tackles, you're not going to see crazy stats unless you're at apparently Pima Juke Community College. but their job is to keep things clean for, you know, Owen Papo and Zacoby McClain. So I think this signing was to backfill for Jeremiah Wright, who was considered kind of the breakout star of spring practice. He was the former 3-star offensive lineman that Auburn flipped over to defense last year, and they kept him there. And he was apparently having a great season at nose tackle. So he went down with an injury. He's probably not going to be back this year. So you go out and get Tony Fair. So now that you have a legit 1-2 punch with him and Tyrone Truesdale at the nose. But the other pickup was Marcus Harris. He is originally from Alabama's from Montgomery, played at Park Crossing. He was a 2-star on Rivals. I think he was like 6'3", 230. I mean, he's one of those kids that was undersized and you just go, can he put on the weight? You know,
drop 10 pounds and play receiver.
Yeah, there you go. It's actually Keith Niebuhr at Auburn Undercover met with his trainer and talked about how a lot of SEC schools, including Auburn and Alabama and Georgia, liked his tape, but he was playing more as an edge pass rusher, which isn't his game. And most of them are saying, you know, he doesn't really fit that mold for what we're doing. So Les Miles took him. He went to Kansas. He redshirted and put on like 30 pounds and played last year at 280 and had a phenomenal season. And it was late. It was kind of midway of the year when he broke out. He didn't play a ton, or the rotation wasn't great early in the season. I don't know if Kansas knew what they had. And then he just started taking over. I mean, he absolutely – West Virginia probably still has nightmares of this kid. He had 7.5 tackles for loss, which would have been second on Auburn behind only Colby Wooden. He reminds me a lot. Now, I'm not saying he's the same. He's not the same level of athlete, but he reminds me a lot of Marlon Davidson in terms of how he plays. He's going to be a heavy end who's maybe not going to become an ace pass rusher, but he's a guy that you can stick on. He can set the edge. He can slide inside and hold up to, double teams in the interior. You know, I think he's a guy. He's going to be considered a redshirt freshman because he redshirted in 2019, and 2020 is like a free year. But I think he's going to come in and push Marquise Burks at that defensive tackle spot or defense. I don't know what he's going to call it in his system, but basically the defensive end on the strong side of the field for 3-4 and then slides inside on nickel. And I think he's going to push there. I'm really high on this kid.
Pegues is playing, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. The same one that Pegues is playing. But I'm really, really high on this kid. I actually think, and it would not shock me if a few years we look back as this was one of the biggest pickups. And I think he's a great example of what the transfer portal is going to do in the future. You got a 2-star kid who's got question marks. Can he do certain things? He goes somewhere else, does those things, shows that he could put on the weight, shows he can play, and then you bring him back home to Auburn.
He's kind of
a perfect example.
What does he bring to the table in terms of Wildcat quarterback if he's playing the same thing as Pegues?
I don't know. I think his pretty weak spin move. So I think he's kind of just a snap the ball, duck the head, run into the center's butt type of guy.
He didn't happen to grow
4 inches over the last 2 years, did he?
You never know.
Because then he could play power forward.
That's true.
Looking for one more scholarship for the basketball team.
That's right.
The basketball team does not need anybody else that plays power forward or center at this point.
Unless their name is JT Thor.
Right. Yeah, well, he's a shooting guard.
He's a two. Yeah. So.
Guys, I need to tell a story on this podcast about that. Just a quick subject change as I derail the podcast yet again.
Gonna make them wait on quarterback talk a little longer.
I told the story in the Slack the other day, but I was asked to see if I wanted to join a men's league, basketball league, because I had shown interest in basketball at work. And the church that I work for sponsors this organization that has this gym. And so I walk over to the gym one day and I peek my head into the basketball court, and everybody playing on the court was at least 6'3". And most of the guys were, when someone's 6'6", they still look like a normal enough height that you can go, well, that guy's pretty tall. But when you get above 6'6", there's this weird thing that happens to your eyes where you're like, whoa, that guy is a giant. Most of the guys playing were above that height. They were tall enough that I was like, geez Louise, those guys are tall. And they weren't just giant old men. These were young, athletic dudes who could run and were physically fit and all had brand new Nikes on. I'm watching this and I watched like 3 or 4 possessions and it's like made three, quick outlet, alley-oop, dunk. And I look at the guy who runs the place and I'm like, dude, what is going on in here? the level of play in this men's league at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday is outrageous. And he goes, oh yeah, man, all these dudes play professionally. I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, yeah, all these dudes play pro. Most of these guys it's their off season from whatever team they're on in Europe and they're hanging out. They're all from Dallas. He said a couple of the dudes were in the G League this year, and he pointed at a guy with dreadlocks, and he goes, that dude over there, he was on the Clippers a couple of months ago. I was like, so these are like legit. He goes, yeah, every single one of these dudes plays pro. I go, so I'm not joining this men's league. He goes, they wouldn't let you join this men's league.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this the men's league they asked you to join?
Yeah, and they ain't going to let you join this men's league. No, because I would get somebody hurt. If you're a normal person, you will just get someone hurt playing in that environment.
But you just gotta stay low and move your feet.
When you see guys that are that tall and that athletic and that skilled all together at once, it is still a freaky thing. And not a single one of those dudes is currently playing on an NBA roster, and every single one of those guys would destroy anyone listening to this podcast in a one-on-one basketball game. And Auburn is now recruiting a higher level of dudes that are better than that, which is wild to me. Like guys who will not be playing in a gym in Dallas at a rec center, but who might be playing on TNT.
That is my worry about trying to seek out a men's league here. Not that I'll run into a bunch of NBA players, because that's not going to happen, but that it will be a bunch of people who have played more than once in the last 12 years, and it would be tough, and I would get hurt and possibly hurt them.
You trying to body up some young Bowers?
I would. That'd be fun. I always liked playing against people that were way stronger and bigger than me, and I just foul the hell out of them.
You should go join Frank Brown, Chief. It's $20 for your.
Well, that's where I used.
It's $20 that's where I used membership to play. For life.
I am hesitant to play there now. I go play out and I really wish the Opelika Sportsplex was closer. I'd go play out there. Yeah. Frank Brown may be a little too intense for my old man self. So I used to hoop at Frank Brown though. That's outside, good. Guys.
The outside the joint game behind is pretty good. Yeah. I saw a guy smoking a joint during a game one time at Frank Brown.
Yeah. No. I played with a guy while he was smoking a blunt.
Unbelievable.
It was fun. I mean, playing out there, but it was something.
So, Nerd, talk to us about quarterbacks. Now that we digress.
I was trying to think of some sort of terrible segue, but I couldn't.
Speaking of people that are bigger and stronger than Chief, we can talk about TJ Finley.
Speaking of being on drugs, some people think that Bo Nix is starting quarterback for us next year.
I was gonna do a blunt thing too, but I was like, I don't think that's actually a good one. something, you know, casual happened. Auburn went out and landed LSU starting quarterback for half a season last year. TJ Finley, massive kid. He's like 6'6", 230 or something. Out of Louisiana. They actually had an Auburn offer coming out of high school, but always dreamed of playing at LSU, like pretty much every kid that's apparently born in Louisiana. He was kind of their sacrificial lamb after Miles Brennan went down. Brennan faced Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Missouri. Max Johnson finished the year by facing Ole Miss's defense and Florida's defense. TJ Finley came in, and he faced South Carolina first at home, and then he had a three-game road stretch of at Auburn, at Arkansas, and at Texas A&M before coming home to play Alabama. So he definitely got the worst into that. But
it's a tough South Carolina team.
That is. Ooh. I mean, that's a loaded defense there.
Top 10 draft pick, J.C. Horn.
Yeah.
That defense wasn't bad, right? I mean, we're okay. Team wasn't good, but.
So this is definitely, I think for Auburn, it, very clear if you watch day-to-day, you don't want to take too much away, but behind Bo's wasn't great. Grant Lloyd is not necessarily a person you want to be trotting out onto Kyle Field if you're taking on Texas A&M later in the year. Demetrius Davis, still high on his ability and his chances to be a contributor, but you don't want to – he's not ready. Like, he's just not ready. He's not someone you want to throw out there in the fire, like LSU had to do with Finley last year, because they will melt down. Like, it's just – unless – I think too many people look at, like, Trevor Lawrence and think, well, you know, freshmen could just step in and be great. It's like, that's not actually the most common thing in the world. So you really don't want to throw Demetrius out there. So going and getting TJ Finley gives you a legitimate backup to Bo, but it also gives you someone that can legitimately compete with Bo this fall for the starting position. Because, I mean, Harsin has no loyalty. Like, he didn't sign Bo. He doesn't have this deep relationship with Bo Nix. He wants to win football games. And so he's going to try to do it the best he can, and he's going out and he's going to try to get the best players he can. And Finley is, without question, been one of the best quarterbacks in the portal. So they brought him in, and he's going to compete with Bo this fall.
I think if anything, it will it'll make people have to just accept that Bo is the best quarterback on campus if he does in fact win the starting job, or the most ready to start. I think that's the best thing that could happen for Bo right now.
That's true.
Is that okay? There's this other guy, and like you said, he will legitimately push him. So if he is the starting quarterback, then that means he is the starting quarterback. I do hope we don't get into some situation where they're both playing a bunch, though. That would be less than ideal.
No, I don't want a Steve Spurrier or a Urban Meyer with a
Leak and Tebow.
Leak and Tebow just subbing them out. I don't really want that. I definitely don't want a Gus Malzahn quarterback carousel. We fired that guy.
Yeah, we could play all three of those guys. Shoot, make it four and throw Grant Lloyd in there.
Make it four. Why not? Somebody always hurt themselves. I just think, you know, there's an old saying, like, is your roster better? You know, like, is your roster better today than it was yesterday? I think the roster's better today than it was yesterday. Like, with Finley adding, your quarterback room is more talented today than it was last week. No matter who's, quote-unquote, the starter, your room's better. You got more talent in that room than you did before he showed up. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's the best way to view all these transfers. You know, are they raising the floor for Auburn next year? And all these moves so far have done this, but Finley in particular raises Auburn's floor. I think in terms of, I don't know if I'm just making up a metric of like floor raising, grade, he would have the highest. Because if Bo Nix
give us a percentage,
yeah,
6.5 on the floor scale.
Yeah, he's more of a two story. A lot of these guys have been one stories. Because of how important that position is, and because of what was behind Bo. So I agree with you, Chief. I actually think that's a great, you know, fair or unfair. I personally believe it was a valid quarterback battle that Bo Nix won against Malik Willis and Joey Gatewood. There are a lot of people that don't. And you know what?
Court Sandberg.
And Court Sandberg. And you know what? I completely get it. Malik Willis is tearing it up at Liberty. Gus Malzahn is not exactly the king of quarterback evaluations. And so if you felt like it, you know, was an illegitimate competition just from the standpoint that Gus was judging it, I think that's a fair take. I do think, though, like you said, that this go around, if Bo wins, I mean, there'll still be a segment that just believes it's not Bo, and
right, you know, there's too much. Patrick
Nix got to another one, which is still my favorite theory, is that somehow Pat Nix has so much pull at Auburn that coaches are willing to risk their jobs over him.
Take that chance to sign that Central High School talent.
Oh yeah. I mean, when Pat Nix comes knocking, you have to listen. We've always known that. I think with Mike Bobo and Brian Harsin bringing in almost like their guy, TJ Finley is more of the mold of what you're going to see Auburn recruit, which is bigger, strong-armed, pocket passers. And that's exactly what Finley is. So I think the winner of this will be viewed as legitimate for most people. So if Bo does win this job, I think you'll have less grumbling around that. And more people kind of accepting, okay, Bo is the best quarterback on the roster right now. But we'll see. We'll see if he is.
Yep, we will.
I think that's the best way to put it. At some point, the rest of the roster, the rest of the transfers, if this year's Auburn team's 78th to 85th best players are better than last year's Auburn team's, then it's an improvement. Because all 85, then you've improved your total roster. But a guy like Finley is not your 78th best player on the team. Yeah. You've now added a guy who might be in the top 20 best player on your team. I'm not the guy who ranks. Remember that was a thing that happened a couple of years ago. The beat writer, I guess he probably didn't want to be called a beat writer, who ranked all of the scholarship players for Auburn football.
Oh yeah. We should bring that back. Oh yeah, I remember it. It was terrible.
He ranked them, which is kind of a fun.
Imagine putting someone number 85. You are ranked 85 on this football roster.
You're the worst player on the team.
Imagine if a walk-on had been ranked above a scholarship player.
Yeah.
Lucky for them, they did not include the walk-ons. So
You're the worst player on this team. Congrats. You're 84. Well, congrats. You're better than one guy. what a ridiculous exercise. But hey, off season's gonna be off season. Back then we didn't have a basketball team to talk about. So
it's true.
Which now we can
speaking of about, a basketball team.
We can talk about KD.
Yeah, we can talk about another two initial first name guy.
This is KD, not Kevin Durant, but KD, the transfer Auburn picked up. Where did he transfer from, Ryan?
I'm trying to think. Let's see. I think Auburn's gotten a couple guys from this place before. Let's see. Maybe like a quarterback and a safety from a couple years ago.
Smells really bad.
believe that would be the University of Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
perfect.
Oh. Interesting.
That's fantastic. Well,
is that the same program? That hasn't What's that year called? I'm trying to remember the year. They did something really good on in football like a long time ago.
It was probably like 39 years ago.
Is that them? Is that the same school?
I think World War II was closer to my birth than that date is to Ryan's birth. I think that's
Make me do some math.
That was a deep cut.
Did you guys know that they've also not been to the Final Four since like 1983?
Oh. Wow!
If only that school was located in a state with a lot of great talent, that would really help them.
Or had a Hall of Famer that also played for the in-state NBA team as well.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Or had money.
Huh. Or had the first overall pick in the draft 2 years ago.
Who is tearing it up? He's going to win Rookie of the Year this year. Their number one overall pick.
Remember when Crow hated that guy?
No, Ryan hated that guy.
Oh, Ryan hated that guy. That's right.
Look. Yeah. All I'm saying is, it doesn't matter who you are, playing for Tom Crean is going to make you look like a not very good player.
Yeah, I think that's that was my point.
That's the moral of the story.
Ryan looked at a guy who's scoring like 30 points a game. He's like, hey, he's not super efficient. I mean, he is taking every single shot for his team because he plays with a bunch of rejects and fat kids. But maybe he's not very
that's
good.
I don't really think that's true, though. That signing class was pretty good.
That's actually the biggest thing on, like, his first signing class had, like, he actually beat Auburn for it. Like, that Christian Brown kid was someone Auburn was actually recruiting.
That's right.
But then he, you know, he just kind of took those players and then was just like, all right, how do I accentuate your weaknesses?
Well, I think
hide your strengths.
I think his problem may have been he was too busy trying to get a hold of a tape of the president at that time saying some racial epithets.
No, you're thinking of the different guy.
What?
Yeah, he's thinking of Roseanne Barr's former husband.
Yeah, yeah, he coaches the Georgia
who
Bulldog.
Looks just
Tom,
like
Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold, who looks just like Tom Crean.
Okay,
yeah.
Who spent like? All right.
Thank you for getting that and walking me through to there.
No, so Tom Arnold famously claims to be in possession of tape of the former president saying racial slurs during a filming of The
Apprentice. That is not the tape of the former president I thought you were referring to at first.
No,
which
that one
weirder.
That one may or may not exist either. But apparently during the filming of the television show The Apprentice, he may have used the N-word on multiple occasions. Tom Crean said he had the tape, and then he didn't.
It's okay. Dennis Rodman told him it was okay.
Tom Arnold said he had the tape.
Sorry. Casually liable.
I get confused too, obviously.
All right, so...
Wow, that was quite the train
was,
there.
That was a journey.
Sorry about that.
To me, if I couldn't fathom being a Georgia fan in general.
I mean, they don't care about basketball, so I guess that's good for them.
Like it goes Georgia football, the Braves, the Masters,
the Falcons.
And there's like a big jump before you get to anything else.
You guys are describing my least favorite people in the world. I think I've decided. Georgia football, the Braves, eating at the country club after church on Sunday, the Masters,
the Falcons.
No, they don't go to Falcons. They don't go to Falcons games because those people are at those games. They watch them on TV or they have a friend with a suite that takes clients there. I know these people too well now.
So, Katie Johnson, who was their best player this last year, right? Is that
one of the two best? Him and Sevier Wheeler, who is also no longer on the team.
Well, none of their players are on the team.
Yeah, they lost 9 guys. Jeez. Georgia basketball lost more players than Auburn football is bringing in from the transfer portal.
Jeez,
so far.
I think, yeah, and Johnson was the one who kind of tore off. He kind of went toe to toe with Sharif in the Auburn Georgia game. That was really
built like
really
a
good.
Bowling ball. Doesn't have a neck.
No, one of two guys on the Georgia team that didn't have a neck last year.
But very good with the old round ball.
Yeah. So Katie Johnson, he didn't start at all for Georgia. He came in midseason, had some NCAA issues, which, and I say issues, I don't Who knows what it is with the NCAA? You never know what he says.
Yeah, do we have any wrong idea with those?
I don't know if it was academic eligibility because he went to Hargrave.
Okay.
Anyways, he came in midseason. Actually, his first game was Sharif's second game. But was playing. He was a point guard in high school, but played kind of the combo guard, both positions behind Sevier Wheeler last year, and was second on the team in scoring with 13.5 points a game.
Off the bench.
Yeah. Still played 23 minutes. Was, like I said, a big part of their offense and arguably their best defender as well on a pretty bad defensive team. I am very excited about this guy. 39% three-point shooter, which Auburn desperately needs.
Yeah.
And if you dive into his advanced metrics on the defensive side, I mean, they're bonkers compared to anybody Georgia or Auburn had last year. 4.3 steal percent, and I think Auburn's leader last year in steal percentage was JT Thor at like 1.8.
Incredible.
So this guy gets out of the ball, doesn't really foul a ton. I mean, he gets some. But then his defensive box plus minus 2.2 was better than any guard Auburn had last year. I think he's going to be a big piece right away for Auburn.
This addition also, you kind of listed his numbers, and I'm thinking of the rest of the roster. Really makes me wish Sharif was coming back. Just I feel like Auburn would score 200 a game with him running the point and distributing the ball to these shooters and these dunkers and the different pieces and weapons that the team has. But even without Sharif, I think the transfer point guards Auburn's picked up have to be licking their chops with just the places they can distribute the basketball to now. And KD is one of those dudes.
Yeah. Between him and Kessler.
And Smith?
Yes, and Jabari Smith, and Desi Stills even, or Sills, and it's a much different landscape than what Sharif had to deal with this last year. He made guys like Dylan Cardwell look really good. So imagine what he could have done with Walker Kessler, and with anyone, literally anyone out on the wing that could hit a shot.
Jalen Green.
Well,
Crow, you'll like this. On KenPom, you know, they do comps for a player for how their numbers stack up against other players historically. One of KD's comps is Matt McClung's freshman year.
Oh, now we're talking.
Interesting.
I think. And Matt McClung has decided to go pro, by the way, and is keeping his name in the draft, even though he's not showing up on anything.
Thor also is still in the draft, right? And his name is nowhere to be found.
But he has somewhat kept his eligibility, whereas McClung has said he's hiring an agent.
Oh.
Well, yeah, I'm out of here.
Seems like a dude that would be into that.
Well, plus he went transferred to Texas Tech, and then Coach Beard left and went to Texas. So it's like, want to transfer again or play for this new guy? Coach Beard, Ted Lasso's assistant coach, was coaching at Texas Tech for so many years. Kind of bizarre. Well, Nerd, that's all I had for you today. I really appreciate you coming on today.
No problem.
Ryan had some Alabama State trivia. We have to save that for next week.
You got any?
Y'all talking Hornets? Y'all talking Hornets? Alabama State Hornets?
Yeah, Alabama State Hornets. All-time records next week. You're here.
Is it? Two Chainz is
Yeah, like Two Chainz is the only thing I know about the Alabama State Hornets.
Rodney Woody is a graduate of there. He was the loss prevention agent at my previous job I had. Good guy.
Nice. Oh, no, they somehow found an elite offensive tackle recently.
Did they?
They had a guy go like the first round or second round not that long ago. Yeah. They had, must be nice.
I feel like
must
they had nice. Somebody noteworthy, like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and I can't remember. I don't know. Anyway, that's for another time.
That's next week.
That's next week. We'll find out. Didn't Alabama State have some guy?
Hot tips for the listeners, nerd, before we go?
Just that Auburn is definitely not done in the portal. I think there's the always hunting for the offensive tackle. You know, if perchance you're a very large human being that's currently sitting on the bench at a other SEC school, and wishing to see the field, and you're happening to listen to this podcast, I've got a great opportunity for you if you want to
open up
slide
into
the DMs. But I think you'll see offensive tackle. You're going to see Auburn try to get a receiver, specifically someone that's more proven than what they've got. Because I think of all the rooms that was maybe the most disappointing this spring, it was a receiver, based off of the way the coaches are talking. But I think, again, some of that's the injuries they had. But I think they'll get a running back. Jordan Ingram from Mobile is the name that's been linked the most. He went to Central Michigan. I'm not sure when a decision's – I believe he's trying to finish up some academic stuff. Not that he's got, like, any major problems, just I think he gray-shirted at Central Michigan last year, and that can be funky stuff.
Where did he play in Mobile?
He played at St. Paul's.
Okay.
He's actually had a number of SEC offers, but he waited too long, lost a spot in all those classes, and some other kids kind of jumped him. He's an intriguing player. I hope he joins the team because I think he's got a really good – He actually reminds me a lot of Jarquez Hunter. So Auburn definitely has a type when it comes to running backs now. And then I'll also keep an eye on a kid that just jumped into the portal from Virginia Tech, Justin Beatles. He's probably more of an outside linebacker in Auburn's scheme. Only spent a year there at Virginia Tech, but he just recently got into the portal. And literally half of Auburn's defensive staff is already following him. So he might be someone – he's originally from Georgia, so he's someone to keep an eye on. And then also recruiting's about to get – This next month is going to be the most insane college football recruiting month in like its history, because after over a year, they're reopening, and already Auburn's got 20 plus official visitors scheduled. You're going to see classes, especially with the transfer portal and teams like being willing to like use those spots for transfers. You're going to see kids jump on opportunity. Like, it's going to get crazy. So
what were those things Trooper Taylor used to do? Can we bring those back?
When we had Sestrunk, Lattimore and Dyer
Big Cat Weekend. Was that what it was called?
They started that, that was a Big Cat Weekend. They're the ones that actually started
Big
that.
Big Cat went to UCF. So,
Yeah. And then and then they used to take limos around to the high schools.
Oh yeah, Tiger Prowl. They specifically got rid of. I will say this about that Chiswick staff: they were the most creative recruiters that there's been in a while. Like, everybody does a Big Cat Weekend now. They're the first ones that ever came up with the idea.
Yeah,
so. Peaked with the swag copter at A&M.
Yeah, yeah. There's just been downhill since.
Yeah. All right, well, guys, we will see you next week. If you are listening to this and have decided to bet against Josh Dubb, again, slide right on into my Venmo. I'm working as Josh Dubb's bookie for this bet. Adios.
Bye.